Hey, everybody. I've got a little bit of housekeeping here before we get into the episode about Instagram and Theology Beer Camp. So I've been getting more active on Instagram, and I just want to let you guys know, in case you want to see me make some videos where I look directly into the camera, I'm sharing some stories and posts about basically all the topics that we cover on this show over at instagram.com/DanKoke. That's C-O-K-E, and the link is in the show notes. Also, Theology Beer Camp is returning in 2024, October 17th through 19th. The theme is Return of the God Pods. That is a Lord of the Rings reference, which should surprise nobody. I will be there alongside Brian McLaren, Diana Butler-Bass, The New Evangelicals, Bible for Normal People, Tony and Josh from GGCH, of course, Trip Fuller and Homebrewed Christianity, and a whole grip of others. And you can use the promo code RETURNOFYHP, all one word, for $25 off your ticket. Prices go up starting June 1st. That link will be in the notes. I hope to see a bunch of you guys there in October. It was a serious highlight of last year for me. Welcome back, everyone, to You Have Permission, the show that aims to take both Christianity and the modern world of science and culture very seriously. My name's Dan Koch. I'm a licensed therapist and a post-evangelical liberal Protestant. Now, this is part two of my Trump anxiety series. Part one, unfortunately for YouTube viewers, is only available as an audio podcast. You can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts under the You Have Permission feed. And if you're listening on a podcast app, then you can go back, scroll back a couple months and find part one. I'm trying to pepper these episodes in every couple of months, as so many of us are anxiously dreading the 2024 election between Trump and Biden. I know that I am. I think that there is some wisdom, however, in some of the cognitive tools that I use with my therapy clients that can help us with this anticipatory anxiety. Make sure to subscribe in the podcast app or YouTube if you want to make sure to catch the next one when it comes out. Let me say right off the bat, my goal here is not to minimize our sense of the potential danger of a second Trump term. I think it may well indeed be quite dangerous. Nor do I want to equivocate between a Trump term and a Biden term or any other possible outcome. As I mentioned last time, it's impossible to predict the future, but on my view, another Trump term is significantly more likely to lead to disastrous results than a Biden term. I will be voting for Biden. I will be donating to Biden's campaign via money and hopefully time. Nonetheless, we each have a lot of life to live before November, and I know for my part, I am in danger of much of that life being sucked into the black hole of Trump-related doom scrolling, of checking polls or betting markets, of binging politics articles and podcasts in the hopes of alleviating my anxiety. And things like that are largely a waste of my time, I believe. They will increase my own anxiety without any discernible impact on the election itself, and they will keep me from pursuing valuable and important aspects of my life over which I actually have some control. So I want to start with a brief recap of the three cognitive distortions or thinking errors that I covered last time, part one. Now, again, cognitive distortions, also known as thinking errors, are just kind of ways that human beings naturally tend to think about the world irrationally, such that they increase things like anxiety and depression. They are repeatable. You can come up with a list of 12 of them, like I do this with clients, and clients will usually find three or four that are kind of their go-tos, and they're not the same for every person, but we all do almost all of them, at least sometimes. Last time I talked about catastrophizing. So especially when we are depressed or anxious, we assume that only the worst possible outcomes will come to pass for any given situation. In this case, that extends well beyond a potential Trump win into, quote, the end of democracy territory, stuff like that, which might happen. But there are also many other less worrisome possible outcomes. And I'm not saying that those ones are more likely. I don't know what will happen, but there are many possible ones. And if I'm anxious or depressed, I'm going to assume only the worst ones will happen. And that's going to further increase my anxiety or depression. Number two, I talked about all or nothing thinking, specifically in relation to the fact that a 4-year term for a president does not entail everything that happens within that nation during those 4 years. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that today. This one is especially interesting and maybe even applicable for Donald Trump because when he's on the scene, he's the number one subject of all media, especially news and politics. But consider just how much has happened in the last 3 years while Biden's been president, and then think about how often you had to think about Biden himself during that time. Presidents have very limited power. They have a lot of power, maybe more power than any other individual in the world, but it's still limited. And just because they want to do something doesn't mean that they can do it. Thirdly, I talked about fortune telling. We actually don't know the future. Let's just pause there for a second. No one knows the future. But in general, as human beings, we are willing to pay quite a bit of money, time, and attention to people who say that they can predict the future. This means that we don't know who will win the election, but probably more crucially, we also don't know what will happen even if Trump does win the election. Remember catastrophizing? There are many possible futures after a Trump win, should he win in 2024, and we can only make our own lives worse by assuming the worst possible outcomes are the only possible outcomes. Now, briefly, I'll say, assuming bad outcomes is different than preparing for bad outcomes. And there might be things we need to do in our lives to prepare for a Trump term. That would not be wasted time. What I would consider wasted time is doom scrolling and just going over the same material over and over and over again and getting down a vicious circle spiral into our own mental distress. So I've got two more cognitive distortions to talk about today. The first one is disqualifying the positive. When we disqualify the positive, we tell ourselves that positive experiences, actions, qualities, things like this don't count. So for example, a normal day-to-day life, we might think, I did a good job on this project, but that doesn't mean I'm good at my job. I just got lucky. In this example, the person is unfazed by a good experience or a good outcome because of a general background assumption or attitude that things are bad overall. For what it's worth, this makes me think of current conversations around a possible TikTok effect that is artificially lowering Americans' opinions of our economy in a way that doesn't match with reality, with the economic data. Now, I'm going to tread into some tricky waters here around disqualifying the positive. Let me start by saying something that might be considered all or nothing thinking, but I don't think it is all or nothing. I cannot personally think of any public figure in my lifetime who I respect less than Donald Trump. I can't personally think of any public figure in my lifetime who I trust less than Donald Trump. Any public figure who seems to me to be less mature than Donald Trump. He may end up, and I would maybe predict that he will end up, among the all-time moral object lessons of human history. That is, of people not to emulate. Of course, I don't know him personally. All I have is his public persona, but the way that he presents publicly, both on purpose and sometimes what appears to be not on purpose, is abhorrent to me. Now, that being said, there is a significant difference between the person Donald Trump and the state of affairs that we refer to as Donald Trump is president. Not everything that happens because or while Trump is president is bad, even if we believe that almost everything inside Donald Trump is bad. Now, I'm a therapist. I'm trained to find the good in people. I don't think everything inside him is bad. I am sure there is a wounded little boy in there. And if he were my client, I would try and find things to like about him to help him change. But he's not. And all he is to me is a public figure. And as a public figure, I don't find much to like. But does this make sense? That's different than all the things that might happen during the state of affairs, Donald Trump is president of the United States. First of all, there are almost 3 million employees of the federal government, many of whom continued to do an excellent job through Trump's first term, over which he had limited control. Second, there are all kinds of things that happen in a country and in the rest of the world during any given four-year stretch that just have nothing to do with who is president. And many of those things have been and will be good. And third, Trump might do a bunch of things for really stupid and immature reasons, for greedy reasons, for power-hungry reasons, etc. But some of those decisions might still end up being good, not because he's good, but simply by chance. Or maybe our interests as individual voters are aligned with some other people's interests, and so stuff gets done that we are actually happy about, even if the guy who is either getting it done or at least, you know, an avatar for half of the country or whatever, the person in power, even if they are a shitbag, that doesn't mean that nothing good happens. So occasionally, my interests for the United States and Trump's interests might even align. For instance, I've got some examples. Some progressives were pretty happy with his renegotiation of NAFTA, especially those who are focused on the labor movement, sort of these old school labor Democrats. Although prison reform advocates will often describe Trump's First Step Act during his term as not going far enough, which I think is true, it did expand rehabilitation, reduce mandatory minimum nonviolent drug sentences, that's a huge one, reduce the federal prison population, etc. These are clearly good developments. And even with a conservative supermajority instated by Trump, the Supreme Court has actually been a mixed bag in terms of ideologically aligned outcomes. Of course, there's Roe v. Wade being overturned. But for example, in the case of Allen versus Milligan, Roberts and Kavanaugh, Trump appointees, joined the liberal justices in favor of black voters suing Alabama under the Voting Rights Act. Another case, Holland versus Bracken, not sure how to pronounce that, saw a 7-2 decision upholding a federal law giving preference to indigenous American families in the adoption of indigenous children. And one more for good measure, because this is a difficult, but I think ultimately healthy activity to look for good things from Trump's first term. Changing the state and local tax exemption led to a 70% drop in this particular tax deduction, which previously 71% of the money saved went to households making over $200,000 a year. This was a tax cut for the rich. This is money back that wealthy families do not in any way need. So this helped to balance the budget and make room for government programs aimed at lower income households. So those are examples of where, for whatever reason, the stuff that Trump did or was okay with other people doing, some of it lined up. Of course, that's, again, not to minimize the possible bad outcomes. What I will say here is that progressive and even centrist media doesn't focus a lot on these kinds of outcomes. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Mainly, their incentive structures are not such that it is worth it for them to do that. Most of their readers, the people who pay their bills, like myself, do not want to hear a bunch of stories about things that Trump did that were actually good. We have a narrative about Trump that he's kind of the worst person ever. And we don't really want that narrative complicated. And as entertainment, which news often is entertainment, we don't like watching shows that are boring or shows that make us angry or shows that don't align with our moral values. And there's a lot of moral gravity around the person of Donald Trump, which, as I said earlier, I totally understand and I share it. But what I'm focused on here is helping manage our anticipatory anxiety, which I know a lot of people are dealing with. So that was the first one. That was disqualifying the positive. I've got one more cognitive distortion for today, and this one is called overgeneralizing. So let me give you an example with a client. So somebody might focus extra on one aspect of their life or one aspect of a particular situation and then generalize that out to the rest of their life or the rest of the situation. So let's say you're anxious or depressed and something bad happens to you. Even something quite bad, like you lose your job, okay? Bad thing happens, you're already anxious or depressed. You are more likely, because of overgeneralization, you are more likely to think that everything in your life will be bad. So yes, you lost your job, but you assume you won't get another job. You might assume that probably your partner will leave you. And come to think of it, your daughter has seemed more distant lately. She must be wanting to cut you out of her life. The heartbreak and the very real pain of losing the job in that area of your life can get generalized over to other parts of your life. But losing your job is no guarantee that a partner will leave, of course. And it would likely have almost nothing to do with a relationship with a son or daughter, right? So we make the generalization, especially if we're already anxious or depressed, but that doesn't mean there's actual evidence for it. So let's apply this to Trump. Let's say that Trump wins. Many aspects of American life, especially American civil or public life, are, in my opinion, likely to get worse. Last time he won, for instance, the refugee system was nearly demolished down to the studs. Confidence in our election integrity plummeted. Conspiracy theories were amplified. Many members of groups that Trump and his supporters saw as outsiders, like immigrants and sexual minorities, experienced both inner turmoil and, in many cases, outward prejudice and harassment. That's not the only stuff that happened during those 4 years. For instance, the COVID vaccine was created at a near miraculous pace, saving potentially millions of American lives, not to mention many more millions globally. 50 million, 100 million, I don't know. It saved so many lives. And Trump, no epidemiologist, and a guy who truly seems to understand very little about the subject. However, he did think it was in his best interest to get that vaccine developed in record time, and I'm genuinely glad that he did. Can I set aside my personal revulsion for Donald Trump and acknowledge that millions of people's lives were saved by this vaccine? And he largely, as far as I can tell, tried to speed it along because he thought it was in his best interest. There's another way of thinking about the overgeneralization trope or trap. Beyond Trump, other good things happened during those 4 years. The Me Too movement addressed deeply dark and misogynistic norms in many industries. In 2019, astronomers got the first ever image of a black hole. That happened during Trump's term. I also think about my own life, and I would encourage you to do the same. From 2017 to early 2021, I started You Have Permission. We had our first child. I got about half of a doctorate in psychology in the bag. Other good things are going to happen in my life and your life between 2025 and 2028, even if Donald Trump wins. Now, I want to be clear here, and this is something that I say to clients all the time when we work on this stuff. I'm not being Pollyanna-ish. I am not saying everything's going to be fine. Things can get quite dark. They may get much darker than they did last time. Also, they could not get all that dark. The point is that we don't actually know. And yet, as humans with human brains, we go about our days as if we do know. And especially when we're feeling anxious or depressed already, those assumptions will tend toward the darker possibilities only. And we will ignore the brighter possibilities. And even though therapists, we try not to give advice, podcasters might be exempt from these constraints. So I'm going to give myself some advice at the end here, and I'm going to record it for the rest of you in case it's helpful for you. Here's my advice to myself. Dan, limit your Trump intake and focus on stuff that both matters to your actual life day in and day out and stuff that you have some actual control over. Number two, figure out something practical you can do politically, preferably more locally, that will have a real impact on your community rather than just becoming a voracious political content consumer. And Dan, if you're really struggling with anxiety or depression around this topic, consider some talk therapy, or failing that, go through a book or something similar. I've been drawing on cognitive behavioral therapy in these episodes, so if you find this approach helpful, then you would likely benefit from doing some CBT. And if you're not going to make it out to see a therapist, the book Retrain Your Brain by Seth Gillihan is as good a place to start as any. Again, I'm planning another installment or two of this series. Thank you guys for listening. Those will be coming out between now and November. So again, make sure to subscribe on your podcast app or YouTube if you want to be sure to catch those, and go back in the history on the podcast app to find part one if you'd like to listen to that. Thank you guys so much for listening.